This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. Welcome to Sci-Fi Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. Sci-Fi Noise can be found at sci-fi-noise.com and it's part of the Deliberate Noise Network. For more details, you can go to deliberatenoise.com if you'd like to. I was trying to get it out as quick as I can, but I'm old, I'm fat, and I'm pacing as I record this, so kind of ran out of breath. Anyway. If you would like to send feedback, go ahead and leave a comment on the website, scifinoise.com. You can also, send me email. That's what I was trying to remember. Send me email. My email address is Derek, that's D-E-R-E-K, at deliberatenoise.com. Or you can call the audio comment line at 734-331-0772. Now, last episode I recorded was right before the Doctor Who 50th anniversary episode. And I said it would probably be a while before I got to another episode, but quite frankly, not. For a couple of reasons. But I think the big one is the fact that there was a lot of stuff that was building up to the 50th anniversary episode. And when I look back on this past weekend, it was almost like a con, right? Like it was almost like a convention online, because it seemed like all of my friends were talking about Doctor Who in some fashion. Right? All my Facebook friends, I should say. Twitter, I didn't really get on Twitter or Google Plus much this weekend. But the friends that I have on Doctor Who on Facebook who are in the Doctor Who were very vocal about it. And then, of course, there were the ones who weren't, which also made for some semi-interesting conversations as to why they weren't. And most of it had to do with special effects, you know. I guess that the people who like the classic episodes that look really cheesy now just have better imaginations than those who need everything spelled out for them, you know? I mean, I grew up on a steady diet of Godzilla and Ultraman and Johnny Sacco. The after school, it wasn't every day after school, but there were times where you'd have, on the weekends you'd have Sir Graves Gastly, who played, black and white horror films, you know. It was usually a guy in a gorilla suit with like a helmet on, or there was Rocket Man and all these, you know, an old Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers. And I'm not talking about those, that hideous ass movie or that horrible television show. I'm talking about, you know, Buster Crab. So back then you had to have some sort of imagination, you know, your imagination would fill in the blocks that the special effects could not. Okay. So a guy with an eyeball on a stick could actually be scary, because in your mind you were making connections that the writers and the presenters of that story wanted you to make. Nowadays, if it's not CGI, then most people, I'm not even going to say most kids, but most people disregard it. You know, oh, that just looks fake. Well, quite frankly, most special effects look fake. You know, that's the purpose of needing special effects, because if it was realistic, then it would just be a stunt. Okay. You know, but neither here nor there. I just noticed that a lot of the guys who were complaining, quite interestingly enough, have very very specific types of jobs. You know, these are guys who write code, so they're very close with the syntax. You know, the syntax has to be correct. Or they are in financials, where, you know, everything is, you know, it's math. Basically, it's math. 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, well, how can we get 1 + 1 to equal 2 for the investor, but 35 for us? You know, that kind of stuff. So I don't really expect for them to have a whole lot of imagination. They have imagination within the realm that they are used to. But outside of that, they don't. No problem. But I didn't really let them bring me down at all, you know, because I had fun. The festivities, shall we say, started on Friday night. BBC America aired a television show called Adventures in Time and Space. An Adventure in Time and Space. I do not remember if I mentioned this on the last show or not, but it was about the early days of creating Doctor Who, okay? And it dealt with the time from when Verity Lambert was brought onto the entire project all the way until William Hartnett was replaced by Patrick Troughton. You know, I mean, it spanned that part. I think I did mention how the guy who played William would stand in for the first Doctor if they ever decide to have a crossover that way. And it was just really good. And it got me in the mood to, at the very least, finish watching An Unearthly Child, you know, which I finally did finish watching this weekend. It's really weird. It's only 4 parts. Each part is only like maybe 20 minutes long, 25 minutes on the outside. And yet it has really taken me a long, long time to watch it. Simply because it's really, if you've ever seen BBC shows outside of the science fiction shows, Or the cop shows, then, you know, there's a lot of sitting around talking. All right. It doesn't matter how it gets to that point. There's always a lot of sitting around and talking. And please remember that this was a drama. You know, this was a BBC drama. It was a lot of sitting around talking. There's a lot of setting up of the plot, you know. Which is, when you think about it, after seeing Adventure in Time and Space, it made sense because they had like a small studio to work with. You know, the people who were in charge of other departments, like the artistic design department and that kind of stuff. Like when they showed in the show that Verity Lambert basically had to sit down with the guy to create the TARDIS. You know, I mean, that's the centerpiece around the whole show. And he kept putting her off. And finally, she just sat there and said, "I'll wait." He got pissed off and basically just grabbed a bunch of shit that was sitting around, stacked it together, cut some holes out of a piece of paper and said, "Here you go. Here's your TARDIS." And then they had to create it from that. I mean, that's the level of non-cooperation that they were getting. So the fact that a lot of stuff came off just is kind of astounding, especially when you see some of the problems where the new set is basically, you know, the doors open and close, it had to be held by people, but sometimes they couldn't get the doors closed, but they were already filming, you know. There were a lot of parts where they went over Wim Hart, his memory loss. You know, he couldn't remember his lines sometimes. And they were going over that, and they eventually revealed why. And I mean, it's just, it was just a really well-told story, okay? I don't know how much of it is exactly true, how much of it is, shall we say, a story made while a lot of the principles are still alive, but not directly influencing, but still can cause trouble with, if they so chose, story. A true story, you know. Because don't forget the movie Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. They never told where he died in the movie. But if you know, he was... They never told where he died in the movie because his wife was a executive producer or an associate producer, some kind of producer. She contributed in a big way. And so she didn't really want people knowing that he died over some other woman's house, you know, that kind of thing. So a lot of the people were probably, a lot of the edges were probably softened. There was probably some conflict created where there didn't necessarily need to be conflict. But either way, it was, like I said, it was a really good story. It was enjoyable, and it did what it should have done, which was get people, and in this case, me, when I'm talking about people, it got me interested in wanting to see some of those early first Doctor episodes. So that's what I did. I ended up finishing An Unearthly Child, which directly leads into the second storyline. Can't remember what it's called. Like The Dead Planet, which is apparently the debut of the Daleks. So I'm looking forward to that when I get an opportunity. One thing I'm surprised that they did not mention were the movies, you know, the Peter Cushing movies. But that kind of also at the same time makes sense because this was focusing on the television show. Anyway, so then there was the Doctor Who 50th episode, the day 50th anniversary episode, the Day of the Doctor itself. And it was pretty damn good. All right. There were a lot of good parts, you know. But I'm going to go through my three questions. These are the three questions I used to ask my kids, my little brother and my daughters, whenever we see a movie, you know, on our way home, ask them basically three questions. What did you like about the movie? What didn't you like? What was your favorite part? All right. What I liked about the movie was, wow, there was just so much. You know, I really liked the way they tied in a lot of the stuff for classic Doctor Who fans. You know, they could have quite easily have ignored everything and just made it sort of like a Russell T. Davies / Stephen Moffat era love fest and completely ignore everybody else. They could have done that, but they didn't. They didn't really spend a whole lot of time on it, but the Zygons were classic villains. The opening itself was pretty much a mirroring. Welcome to the Midwest, folks. A mirroring. Pretty good reflection / homage. There you go. Of the first scene in the first episode, which I instantly got because I had just finished watching the first episode earlier the week, you know? And there's... it starts off with Clara working at a school, and they showed, like, a plaque or of some sort, a big sign about the school. It gave the school's name, but the headmaster was Ian Chesterton, who was one of the first companions, and I dug that. I thought that was really cool. And then there was a story. I mean, like I said, the story was good. It touched on a lot of things. It wrapped up one of the biggest questions we've had since Eccleston appeared, which was what happened to the Time Lords. You know, it answered what happened in the Time War. You know, this whole exercise answered what happened between, you know, what happened to... Looks like my database has been updated. Jesus. it answered what happened. It gave everybody a regeneration scene, basically. McGann regenerated in Night of the Doctor. He regenerated into John Hurt, who went by the Warrior, the War Doctor. And then at the end of his story, it looks like he was regenerating to Eccleston. Not really going to tell how he got to that point, because if you've seen it, then you know. If you haven't seen it, I'm going to try to talk around it in some way. But we all know what regeneration means. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed most of the story. Not all of it, but most of it. Now, the second question is, what didn't you like about it? What I did not like about it was the Queen Elizabeth stuff. It's just me. I know I don't like a whole lot of the Elizabethan traveling to the past type stuff of Doctor Who, you know? Why not travel to the past of another planet for once? It's just what I'm saying. However, and I will point this out, right? Even that part made sense when the show was over. The reason why is because after that episode aired, okay, they go to one of the Christmas specials with David Tennant, and he mentions the time that he married Queen Elizabeth I. And that's, you know, and I always thought it was kind of weird that they would put in that, you know, Queen Elizabeth I, the Virgin Queen, married some random dude that nobody noticed. But then when they mentioned it in the episode after, it's like, okay, now I get it, you know? Now I understand. So this, the one thing that I didn't like ended up making a whole lot of sense, you know? And now, normally around this time, some people will probably be expecting for me to complain about the time travel and meeting yourself and all that kind of stuff. When it comes to Doctor Who, unless they get really obnoxious about it, I try to ignore the whole time travel aspect of it, you know, the lunacy of the time travel aspect. There was one episode that really bugged me with that, where I think it was the one with the Pandorica, where Doctor Who kept, like, flipping, you know, from time to time, dropping clues and hints for himself later. And it's just like, that kind of stuff where it's just trying to be too cutesy, that bugs me. quite frankly, in this episode, it didn't bother me as much because I knew what they were trying to go for, you know. My favorite part, which is usually like a scene or a concept that goes throughout the whole show, and I want to say it was probably the big end to the Time War when you had all the different doctors together. That not the very end, not the last scene where you had them all standing together. I mean, when they were, you know, fighting the Daleks and all the different, all 13 TARDISes. I like that part. Unfortunately, that's around the part when Patty decided that she wanted to talk to me. She called me up on the phone and wanted to talk to me about something. So I didn't get all the details, so I could only get the visuals. And maybe because it's a bunch of time travel stuff, maybe just the visuals is what really sold that for me. So there you go. Now on Sunday, I do have to mention one thing. Before the 50th anniversary episode, there was a pre-show show. I'm just going to call it what it was, a pre-game show, okay? It was Veronica Belmont, who I've seen in other stuff, usually online, podcasts, that kind of stuff. It's really weird. I've actually seen her being interviewed about being some sort of internet celebrity, and I've actually seen her doing things. And this time I actually saw her doing stuff. And while she has a lot of, I guess, charisma, she's not really a very strong interviewer, at least not in this case. And they had her on there with a bunch of people who I don't even remember. And now these were, I don't know, I think they were supposed to be like celebrity fans, but I had never heard any of them, you know. And for them to talk, it's one of those, she's supposed to be interviewing this panel, but every time they would start to talk, it would just be like taking questions from the audience. And the audience would ask them questions like, who was your favorite doctor? What are your favorite villains? You know, stuff like that. I mean, just the fluffiest of the fluff questions, right? And so, quite frankly, she did the best she could with what they gave her, and what they gave her was so insipid. Oh, man. There's this guy called the Nerdist, Chris Hardwick, I think. I really don't know how he's popular. Every time he shows up on my TV screen, I immediately turn the channel. It's funny because I record the Daily Show on my DVR every night. And I'm watching, and I never watch interviews because I think if you know me, I'm not a big interview fan. But I watched the first two segments. And at the end of the second segment, the beginning of that commercial break, they have a commercial for his new show on Comedy Central. Every time I see his face, I know it's time to stop and delete that show. Reason I bring this guy up, and the thing is he's really popular. He's really popular. People really like him. He's a episode delete Pavlovian response for me. But anyway, his production house is the guy who is the other ones who put that thing together. He was the executive producer of that pregame show. Wow, you know. Quite frankly, Veronica Belmont deserved a lot better. And if she's the one who put everything together, then no, she didn't. That it was painful to watch at times. But luckily, it's easy to push that out of your head once you get to the actual episode. The actual episode is really good. Now, on Sunday, the BBC released an online thing called The Five-ish Doctors Revisited or something like that. I don't know. But it's sort of like, all right, Adventure in Time and Space told about the early days. You know, it was a fictionalized look at the early days of the Doctor Who television show. Then you had the episode. Then you had a comedic look at some of the classic Doctors trying to get cameos on the new show. On the new episode. And it was hilarious. You know, if you, like I said, if you are a Doctor Who fan, if you're a Doctor Who nut, you're going to laugh through most of this. Even if you just like sort of, I will say it, zany comedy, you would get a kick out of it. But there are a lot of Easter eggs for Doctor Who. It even starts off with John Pertwee's son. You know, he's talking to, I think her name is Olivia Colman. She's actually been on Doctor Who. I cannot remember the character she's played, but I've seen her in a bunch of stuff. She is also currently on Broadchurch, which is a murder mystery detective cop show with David Tennant. You know, and it's funny because she's like, I'm not in this. And I'm in everything. I thought that was funny. That kind of put it on... on a specific track, and it did not let me down. It was written and directed by Peter Davidson, who was the Fifth Doctor, and it's basically him. It's number 5, number 6, and number 7. Davidson, Baker, and McCoy trying to get on the show. Okay, trying to get in the episode any way they can. It's just really funny. If you like shows where you see celebrities pretty much poking fun at themselves, their public personas. If you like a show like Curb Your Enthusiasm or Real Husbands of Hollywood, where, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm was like basically a fictionalized look at Larry David's life, and Real Husbands is a fictionalized look at Kevin Hart's life. This is a fictionalized look at these three guys trying to get on the show. And I'll tell you right now, and I don't care if I'm gonna spoil this, but there's this one part, and this is my favorite part, right? Probably one of my favorite scenes of the whole weekend. They're trying to get Tom Baker to come on board with their scheme, okay? When they call him, they get his voicemail. But the scene that they used on the show was pretty much the scene that they used in The Five Doctors. Now, if you remember The Five Doctors, Tom Baker didn't want to have anything to do with it. So they pretty much wrote his doctor off very early in the crossover. By having him, he's like on a gondola with Romana, and they are just completely caught unawares, and they get just swooped up, and that's it. It's just like maybe 10 seconds worth of screen time. Well, they took that same gondola screen, and they used it, that scene, and they used it in the show, in this half-hour thing, to explain why he was not available. It was hilarious to me because I got the joke, you know. And every time I think about it now, it still just cracks me up. My son was watching with me, and he did not get it. He did not know what was going on. All he knows is that, you know, the film stock changed, and I thought it was funny. If you can find it, which you should be able to, it's funny. If you're a Who fan, you'll like it. Even if you're just like a comedy fan of seeing these old guys trying to relive their days, it's really good, right? And there are a lot of cameos throughout this whole thing. I mean, there are people who I did not expect at all to show up, and they showed up. Just watch it. Really serious. And like I said, after this whole weekend, and I actually sat around and watched a whole bunch of Doctor Who clips on YouTube, And I really felt, you know, like today isn't the last day. And it really feels like the Monday after a convention when everybody's getting back to work, but these warm, happy feelings about this past weekend are still there. They're still trying to cling on, even though already people are complaining about Doctor Who, and it's like, ugh, I don't expect you to get it, you know? Just like I didn't get comic book conventions until I actually went to one. Because I'd see this, you know, year after year, all my friends are going to comic conventions, and Monday comes around, and it's, I just keep thinking about the convention, you know? And then that Friday, last week I was at a convention. It's just like, jeez, all right, you're at a convention. Who gives a fuck? You were just standing around talking about comic books. I get that feeling, you know. Part of me wishes I could go back and really, I wish I could have seen this with a bunch of other fans. Now, all these different shows, I wish I could have seen them with other people. But it's just me and Steven, and quite frankly, Steven would rather play his video games. So, anyway, if you watched any of the things I mentioned, tell me, what did you think of them? Leave a comment on the website. You can email me. It's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at deliberatenoise.com. Or you can call the audio comment line, 734-331-0772. Write it down. Plug it in your phone. Just make a call. Doesn't matter to me. Anyway, thank you for listening, and I will be back soon with another episode.